Welcome back to Cardio Connector, where we connect you to the latest in cardiovascular science, practice, and care in Canada. I'm Seema Nagpal, Chief Science Officer at CCS. Today's episode is part of CCS's annual Heart Valve Disease Learning Series. The program aims to provide healthcare professionals with up-to-date practical knowledge on heart valve disease diagnosis, treatment, and best practices. The series features multiple learning formats and includes podcasts, Section 1 accredited webinars, Section 3 accredited self-assessment programs, and micro-learning opportunities. To learn more about this program, please visit us at ccs.ca. And also, hit the subscribe button to be notified when we publish new podcasts and join your community on the airwaves to advance heart health for all.
Welcome to today's episode of Streamlining Heart Valve Disease Care, Building Effective Healthcare Pathways. This episode is part of the CCS Annual Heart Valve Disease Learning Series. My name is David Messica-Zeitoun. I am a cardiologist at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute and chairman of the CCS Working Group on Valvular Heart Disease. Today, we are talking about a growing concern in cardiology, heart valve disease. With me today, we have Dr. Arindra Vijayasundara, who was also one of the speakers of the second webinar of this series. Welcome, Arindra.
Thank you, David. Very excited to be here. I am an interventional cardiologist and the chief of the heart program at Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center in Toronto.
Let's drive right in, Arindra. Could you please remind us of what is the ideal journey looks like for a patient with valvular heart disease?
Absolutely. So in an ideal scenario, we would identify the valve disease, the condition before symptoms even appeared, or if it's necessary, when they were very early, at a very early stage, through targeted proactive screening. And from there, the patient should be monitored very closely by a cardiologist who has expertise in valvular heart disease. And then, when ready, a timely referral for an intervention.
It really feels like we are falling short on all these fronts, not just here in Canada, but across most of the Western countries as well. Would you agree?
Indeed. That is unfortunately correct. So despite the high prevalence of valvular heart disease, and it affects about 3-4% of patients or people aged between 65 and 75, and almost 1 in 10% of those over 75 years, awareness remains surprisingly low, both among the general population, but even among physicians. And the many reasons for this, and one is that symptoms for valvular heart disease can be very vague or non-specific. And because of that, it's rarely considered as the top of mind condition when a physician is seeing a new patient. There's as really no or very limited screening currently done for valvular heart disease. And even when it's suspected, access to make the definitive diagnosis can be a real barrier. So, for example, there are challenges in seeing a cardiologist. There are challenges in getting a timely echocardiograph. There's delays and challenges in getting referred to cardiac centers that perform interventions. And even when all of those steps have taken place in many jurisdictions in this country, the hospitals that are able to perform those interventions have inefficient capacity to do both testing and the timely interventions. And what really makes this concerning is we have great options right now, like transcatheter therapies, which are really well suited for many patients, including those who are elderly or high risk, who in the past would not have had any options. So we're not limited by technology or the number of treatment modalities that are available, but there is a real gap between what's possible in 2025 and what's actually happening on the field.
Arindra, you mentioned that now we have multiple therapeutic options, including availability of transcatheter therapies. Once a patient is referred to a cardiac center, how is the best treatment approach determined? And how do you make sure that patients' goals and preferences are fully integrated into that decision?
Yeah, it's a critical point. And there are some cases where it really is straightforward that there is a better option. And so, for example, surgery in very young patients or transcatheter options for older or high-risk patients. For most, they fall in between. And really, the decision is governed by the patient and their family's goals and individual preferences. And so it is really crucial that we have a mechanism that we can deeply involve the patient and their family and lay out what those options are. And so that requires a dedicated heart team with expertise in valvular heart disease that has an opportunity to discuss and come to consensus on what the benefits and drawbacks are for each option. And they do that by reviewing all the relevant diagnostic tests and imaging, and then taking the time to present that to a patient so we really align with their preferences, that they know what the benefits and drawbacks are, so they can make a decision that's right for them. So it's a combination of having a team that evaluates all the information that we can present in a concise, useful manner to the patient and the family, what the options are, and help the patient and their family go through the process of making what is the right decision for them that respects really their perspective and wishes. And I believe it is something to be deeply proud of that we are at a point in valvular heart disease that we can say we have a number of therapies that are available. And it really is a luxury to be able to say that and give patients the choice for what makes what is best for them.
And who are the key members of this valvular heart disease team?
So the core team typically involves interventional cardiologists, involves cardiac surgeons. It includes echocardiographers, interventional echocardiographers, who are individuals who have expertise in directing the actual imaging during the procedure, also anesthesiologists, and the patient and the family's primary cardiologist also needs to be a key person on that team because they've known the patient for longer. So as I mentioned earlier, a conversation with the patient and family is key, but also having somebody who is really familiar with their path is important for discussion of individual patients. So there are core members in the team and there are others that you'll bring in for specific circumstances.
We have touched on the system issues like hospital capacity and wait times. It seems that many patients end up being admitted with heart failure or complications before they even receive an intervention. How significant or impactful is that?
It's very, very important, and it is significant. So these therapies that have evolved, the transcatheter therapies that we've mentioned and surgery, works best when it is done in a patient who is at a point in the trajectory of their disease that they need an intervention, but they're stable. They are an outpatient. They come in for the procedure. They go through recovery. When a patient's condition has deteriorated to the point that they need hospitalization, it often means that their outcomes are going to be worse. So there is no doubt, and a lot of work that has come out of Canada has shown that delayed interventions are associated with an increased risk of dying or hospitalizations on the wait list. That's associated with worse outcomes after the procedure.
Equity is one of your key areas of focus, both for your clinical work and research. Is access to care for valvular heart disease consistent across Canada?
Unfortunately, it's not. It's not. There's work that we have done over the last decade plus that has shown access to surgery and transcatheter interventions, but there's disparity across the country. In addition, there is disparity in the diagnosis of valvular heart disease. Some of that work has really been done within jurisdictions in provinces, which show that even within regions, there are differences. So it really is both a upstream and downstream problem. There's disparities in how people are being diagnosed. Once diagnosed, there are disparities in how they're being referred. There's also disparities in whether they're getting the intervention. And although access in general has improved over the last decade, which is a good story, the disparities between jurisdictions and provinces that have done very well and those that have improved, but not as much. Although kind of abscess overall has improved for everybody, the disparities are actually worse today than they were 12 years ago, which is quite sobering and highlights the work that needs to be done.
So how do we increase access and reduce wait times for patients in Canada?
So we need to increase overall system capacity for diagnosis and for interventions, but we also need to change the system. It needs to be smarter and more efficient. We can streamline processes, encourage same-day discharges when safe. That's on the actual procedural side so that the capacity we have can treat more people. We also have to have triage systems so that when people are diagnosed, we're able to get them the care that they need quickly. And we have a mechanism of triaging them so the patients who need care fastest are the ones who are getting it faster. And the final component is diagnosis. We need to create a system for appropriate patients to be identified and getting into the system. And that's probably where the most work needs to be done.
Arindra, you have been a strong advocate for system reform and thoughtful healthcare organization. How should we reorganize the healthcare pathways for patients with valvular heart disease?
So what we know is that the penetration of these interventions is still low. So even though we've made a lot of progress on the interventions, we've made progress on the how streamlined getting diagnosis and care is, first have to get into the system. And that's where we have the most work to do, as I mentioned. And we can draw on what's been done in heart failure. So in heart failure, there's a recognition that there are many, many people to treat. And it can't be done by one group of people alone. So taking that to the valve side, it's taking advantage of this idea of a spoke of a node. The node in this circumstance are the specialized centers that do valve interventions. We have approximately 30 nodes across the country. However, they can't look after all of the patients that have valve disease, nor can they identify them. And that's where the spoke and the hubs come in. So the spokes are the first line, primary care. And they really will be the key component in detecting and screening. And we recognize that that is a group of professionals that are stretched, but it is key that they are part of this healthcare reform and solution to valvular heart disease. Once the diagnosis has been made, they need to be referred for an echocardiogram to confirm the diagnosis and then get referred into a specialist. Those specialists cannot be simply at the sites that do the interventions. That's where the hub comes in. Those are cardiologists who have expertise in valvular heart disease, access to high-quality echocardiography that can make the diagnosis and manage these patients up to the point where they need an intervention and then transfer them to the node. So it does require that framework be established. And it is being done in other conditions. It's heart failure is one example where there's ongoing work there. This idea of a node with spokes around it is not a new concept, and there's many lessons that have been learned from stroke care, from heart attack care, that we can apply those lessons to valvular heart disease.
Thank you very much, Arindra, for sharing this valuable insight. While we know that managing valvular heart disease still has its challenges, it's very encouraging to see that promising solutions are within reach. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Cardio Connector podcast. I'd like to invite you to subscribe to the podcast so you can stay up to date on upcoming episodes of the CCS Heart Valve Disease Learning Series. Until next time, stay healthy and take care.